Good morning. We're about 6 minutes past the hour, but we do have a quorum, so let us go ahead and get started. The August 23rd, 2023 meeting of the Coastal Regional MPO will now come to order. The core MPO is holding in-person meetings with a virtual option for non-voting members and members of the public. For staff, board members, and members of the public who are participating today, today's agenda is broken down into the following items: approval of the agenda, committee reports, action items to be presented by the staff, other business, staff reports on current projects, activities, information report, other public comments, notes by the chairman, adjournment. For each agenda item, the staff will make presentations. The board may then ask questions of the staff for clarifications. During the public comment section, the floor will be open to the public to discuss matters on the agenda. For members of the public, if you wish to comment on an item that is the board is considering, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. For person attending the meeting in person who desire to speak, staff will provide you with a speaker's card. At the appropriate time, I will recognize you and staff will direct you to the microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by me, you will be notified that your time has expired and I will recognize the next speaker. The meeting will now be called to order. Our first order of business is the approval of the agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda. Second.
From properly motion and second. What they need for you all to do is, yes, say your name. Go again. You got it?
Take the second.
All right, then properly motion and second that the agenda be approved. Are you ready for the question? Please cast your votes by stating your name. To my right first.
Callanan, yes.
Faye DeMassimo, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Les Fussell, yes.
Kegler, yes.
Tanya Milton, yes.
Tom Hutchison, yes.
The chairman, yes, and from GDOT, she's yes. All right. All right, we will have our committee reports. ACAT. In fact, ACAT and ACA.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Morning.
ACAT met this Monday and endorsed all action items, and it was the same for CAC, who met last week.
Okay, what about CAE? Same thing? CAC, I'm sorry.
CAC also met last week and endorsed all action items.
Okay. TCC?
TCC met August 17th. We concluded all of our action items. There was no recommendations forward to the MPO at that time.
Okay. Executive Director's report?
Just wanted to announce that we had workshops regarding the boundaries as well as the dues formula with the board members to make sure that everybody understood that process. So we had that from the last time that we met.
Okay. All right, let's go to the action items. Approval of the June 28, 2023 core MPO board meeting minutes. Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes as they are. Les Fussell.
Milton, second.
Properly motion and second that the June 28th minutes be approved as they are. All in, any questions? Starting to my left, please identify yourself and your vote.
Tom Hutchison, yes.
Tanya Milton, yes.
Kegler, yes.
Les Fussell, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Callanan, yes.
GDOT and the chairman, yes. Okay. All right, we go to other business that we have. All right, then let's go to status report. Ms. Marcota.
Good morning.
Morning.
Before I do the status report, let me just introduce our new planner, Genesis. She will be taking the lead in the congestion management process update, and also she will be responsible for transit planning, so coordinating with CAT. The 2050 plan, MTP, there are several items. Social economic data, we are still working on the 2050 SE data development. Hopefully, we can send that everything to GDOT by the end of August. Travel demand model, Asia and our transportation intern, Rizvika, who returned to school already, but they complete the link check for Chatham County. The MPO planning boundary, the board actually approved the boundary for the COMPO for the next 25 years, and we already started to coordinate it with GDOT so that they can start to develop the revenue projections for the next 25 years within that boundary. And then Genesis has already acquired the cost estimating tool, so we will start to plug in properly projects and test cost estimates if we have new projects to be included. The contributing plans, freight plan is wrapping up, and we are hoping to probably have the last ADFAC meeting in September or October to wrap everything. And non-motorized transportation plan, Asia is going to give a presentation, urban planning model, and Anna is going to give a presentation that will fit into the resiliency planning. And the US 80 corridor study, Chris and Rhodes are here today, and they are going to give a recommendation for that. So we will incorporate the study recommendations into the 2050 plan. And the CAT's master transit plan, it was adopted by the CAT board in July, and Faye has already sent us both the document and the executive summary. So basically the 2050 MTP, the transit section is already done. Several other plans might not make it to the 2050 plan. State Route 204 corridor study, US 17, 25 corridor study, and President Street Railroad Crossing Elimination Study. Chatham County is in the final stages of contract letting. And if they identify projects, and we will see if we have the revenues, we can amend them into the 2050 plan. And like I mentioned, Genesis will be taking the lead in the congestion management process. We hope to have that wrap up by the February of 2024. So that will be a major component for the 2050 plan as well. Our consultant for the freight plan has already compiling a matrix. So these new studies, we will just add on to the new matrix so that we will see if a project get several checks from all those recommendations, probably will be a good candidate for inclusion in the 2050 plan. And another important portion of the of 2050 plan is resiliency. Actually, the GPA conference this fall, we have a dedicated session on that resilience planning. And our planner, Anna McMurray, will be taking the lead in that. And public engagement, we are still considering the second round of public involvement to tell the public about their feedback because they gave us the survey. And we need to tell them, okay, what the survey results say. And also with all the studies that I have mentioned, the plans, so we will just let them know these are the recommendations that will be included in the 2050 plan. And then we will start to work on developing the draft. So probably by the end of the year, probably November, December, we will start to work on the draft document. So, and then we will send all the available chapters probably to Federal Highway, Federal FTA, and GDOT for review. So they don't have the last minute to review the whole document. So we will start to work on that. But hopefully the draft final one, the preliminary draft will be done, at the end of March. So, we will go through the second round of public involvement and then have the public comment period for the draft. So that's a very brief scenario for the 2050 plan update. Any questions?
Any questions for Marcota? No questions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
And then I would dig into the fleet plan. The fleet plan, we already had 4 ADVAC meetings and we have almost all of the deliverables online, except the last ones, the development of final report and documentation. So this will be a summary report of all the existing technical memos. And like I said, the consultant is also compiling the matrix. So that will help us to 2050 plan. And then they are also working on the profile, original modal profiles. So what is the profile look like for roadways, for rail, for air traffic, and for marine traffic, freight. So we are going to probably bring those as a with a second brochure to the second round of public meetings, and probably final round of public meetings as well. So those would be the information that we can use. So we are still collecting input for all these technical memos, and these are very, very detailed analysis. We received some comments, tremendous comments from the ADVAC chairman, Pam Bernard. She sent at least 20 or 30 comments. And then we also got our new planner, Anna. She is dedicated to resiliency planning, so she wasn't satisfied with the task 2.7 for resiliency. She said the information over there is not sufficient enough. So we actually scheduled a meeting with the consultant to talk about it. So the notes have been taken, so the consultant's addressing the comments. So we would encourage, if you are interested, please just review the technical memos and send us comments back. If in the middle of September, that would be fine. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Any questions? All right. When you said they weren't quite satisfied with 2.7,
Anna might give you more details on why she's
Give me a hardcore what you're talking about. And it might just entail what you have and what you think should be there that's not there.
Great. Hi, everyone. My name is Anna McCory. And so I spoke with Chris and Wakoda, I think, last week. By not sufficient, essentially looking at resilience from a more whole system, like a whole system type view. A lot of people have a view of environment or resilience. It can be very narrow and siloed within the impacts. And so I was encouraging them to take a broader look. So for example, if we're looking at freight parking, can we utilize brownfields? Are there areas that are already polluted where you could maybe have a use, you know, of paving that over and putting it as a parking lot? And that's just an example. For example, green infrastructure, not only suggesting that you use green infrastructure, but what's better and more for roads that have more freight. So can we really go into the specifics of how it affects freight? So those are just a few items.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I got a better understanding now what you mean.
Yeah, so it's really just, I think the traditional view of the environment is that it's very siloed, but thinking about it in a larger perspective, for example, as the world gets hotter, you know, temperatures get hotter, how does that impact roads with more freight coming? What does the maintenance look like for a road as temperatures impact it? So,
Like I heard this morning, climate change and because the temperature is hotter, they're having a problem getting the ship through the Panama Canal.
Exactly. Like, what is the impact of heat on our workers, on our drivers?
Right.
So looking at it from a variety of angles.
Right. Okay. All right. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to find out exactly what you were saying when you and so they need to broaden their scope and just stop thinking about environment, but think about the whole thing.
Correct. And all the other sections were so great and filled out. So I think it's just as a whole, you know, when we're thinking about these things, it's a shift of mindset. So that was just encouraging, and they were very receptive and are going to be working on that.
Do we have a list of who you need to get in touch with to broaden their view? Are we talking about the ports? Are we talking about the freight folks? Who are we all are we talking about?
Great. So I think that will go into the resiliency chapter of the MTP. Okay. This is specifically for the freight update that will go into that resiliency section. Okay. So as someone who's going to be writing that, I'm very interested in having all that extra added information.
Okay, got it. Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks.
Any other questions? All right.
Thank you. And we will just make sure that you send me all the comments as fast as you can. Mm-hmm. Let's just move on to the next one. Yeah, the Asia is doing the non-motorized transportation plan.
Okay.
Okay, I'll be giving a brief presentation on what we've been doing so far with the non-motorized transportation plan update. By non-motorized transportation plan, this is essentially our bike and pedestrian plan for the Savannah area. So we've been in a really heavy data phase, working with really large data sets to analyze the current bike and pedestrian conditions in the area. And some of that data includes bike and pedestrian volumes, origin and destination data, crash hotspot analysis, and also a level of comfort analysis. And a lot of this data was sourced from Strava Metro, which is a free program that supplies bike and pedestrian information for free. And then also Newmetric, which is where we got the crash data from. So this is just an example of what the data is looking like so far. This is not finalized by any means. We still have to go in and look deeper at some of these bike volumes. But essentially, this map is telling us where people are biking the most. So the darker the line is, the more people are biking there. This is also only for the year 2022, but we have data for several years, I think for the last 5 years. This is also a closer snapshot of the downtown area. Again, the darker the line is, the more biking there is. And so we see a lot on Louisville Road and then also some other areas within the city. But then again, this is not the finalized data, and this is only 1 year. So once we compile everything and really look into it more closely, this may look a little bit different. Similar for pedestrian volumes, the darker the blue is, the more people are walking there. And then we also see a closer snapshot of the Savannah area. And we see a lot of kind of a darker blue around Forsyth and Daffin Park, which is not surprising. We also have...
Question.
Yes.
Do you have... can you go back and we have a lot of individuals that walk in the Lake Mayor area. Do we have that information on that section?
Yes. So I can't zoom in just because this is a PDF.
Okay.
But we have bike and pedestrian volume data for essentially the whole core MPO area. So Lake Mayor is included in that.
Okay.
I just can't zoom into it specifically. We also have origin and destination data, which is detailing where bike and pedestrian trips start and end. We recognize that this format may not be the easiest to understand, so we're trying to figure out how to show more directional data, such as a bike trip is starting here and it's ending on the west side, something like that. But this gives a snapshot of where a lot of bike and pedestrian trips are starting, where people are starting their trips, and then also where they're ending their trips. So these are not the only data sets that we're using. These large data sets are extremely useful for giving us a general idea of where people are biking and walking, but it's not the only data set we're using. We'll also be using census and American Community Survey data on vehicle availability and travel methods. We're also still trying to get public input so people can tell us what they need and where. Additionally, we're also just keeping our eyes peeled for pedestrian and bike activity. And we're also identifying factors that may skew some of this data as well. So in addition to these large quantifiable data sets, we're also using other quantitative and qualitative methods to paint a complete picture of bike and pedestrian usage within the area. We also have our crash hotspot analysis. And this just shows where crashes are happening the most. So this PDF shows a really high level viewpoint. And you can see a lot of crashes being concentrated within Savannah, but then we also see some other hotspot points. So the next step with this data specifically is to look corridor by corridor to identify any corridor, street, or intersection where we're seeing a lot of crashes, and then make recommendations on what should be done in those areas. We also did a level of comfort analysis for our existing bikeways. So level of comfort refers to how comfortable the biking conditions are to the average person. It's rated on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the most comfortable and 5 being the least comfortable. The parameters for this analysis originated from the Athens in Motion Plan, and it uses speed limits, functional classification, and bike lane designs as factors to determine bikeway comfort. And this is just a look at the methodology that was used, and it was sourced from the Athens in Motion Plan. So I won't go into every single level of comfort score, but a level of comfort score of 1 means that it's easy enough for kids to use pretty easily. A level of comfort score of 5 means that no one should be using that bikeway, including adults. So these are the results of that analysis. The green bike lanes are the easiest to use, and a lot of them are concentrated within the Savannah area. And then the hardest to use bike lanes are in red, and a lot of those are outside of the Savannah area. With some modifications, such as protecting bike lanes with a barrier, some of these yellow bike lanes could easily become green bike lanes, or greens, and are therefore easier to use. So we want to look really closely at these medium difficulty bike lanes and see what can we do to make them easier to use, because they have potential to be easier to use. And this is just a breakdown.
Quick question. The bike lanes that you're showing in red.
Yes.
Are those actual bike paths or?
So these are designated bikeways throughout or that currently exist within the core MPO area. So some of these might not be recognizable as a bike lane because some of these might just be a share row, which means there might not be a painted designation or a barrier. So for some, and this is something that I get into in later slides, is even though this some areas were designated as bike lanes, because there weren't any signs or any physical barriers, it was hard to tell if there was a bike lane there at all. But yes, these are existing bike lanes.
Mm-hmm. So, Asia, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
When I look here at the Richmond Hill, it doesn't appear that the recently installed bike lanes and sidewalks are incorporated into this study along 144.
Yeah.
It may not be enough data to assess that yet using just the data, but I would think that those were probably in the green, yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are designated, they are wide enough, and I myself have used them several times, so
yes,
they're very safe.
So this level of comfort analysis is definitely far from complete. It only includes bike lanes after, I think, up until 2020. So we are missing some data, and we are missing some bike lanes that we do need to go back and review. So thank you for telling me that, because now we can go back and look at those and assess them. Yes.
So shouldn't you even reach out to Bryan County as well as Effingham County?
Yes, yes. So we've been trying.
This is 20.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Yes. And we've been trying to do that. I have a contact with Effingham County from, I think, the organization is Effingham Bikes. And so hopefully I'll be getting some data from them soon.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I believe the contact for the Bryan County is actually online. So
we can
get you that.
Yes. Yes, that would be perfect.
And we are just, if you weren't aware, we are in the process of doing our action plan for our non-motorized transportation right now. So
okay, perfect. We
had gotten the grant for it, and we had just gotten the award letter.
Okay, so that's both Effingham and Bryan.
Yes, that's good.
When we get that information, then we can incorporate this so we can bring it up to date. But those of us sitting here and those of who listen, remember, this is from 2020, right?
Yes.
agency. So we haven't come to 2023 yet.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we get that data in and then we can include it in the report.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. So this is just a breakdown of the bikeways that have been observed so far. The majority have a level of comfort of 1, and about 1 in 10 have a level of comfort of 5. Again, if we add a protected barrier to some of the level of comfort 3 bike lanes, they could become a level of comfort of 2 or 1. Other observations made during this analysis was that a lot of the bike lanes were inconsistent in size and design. So we really want to make the whole bike network consistent from beginning to end. So we don't want a bike lane to start protected and painted and it's very obvious that it's a bike lane, and then suddenly sometimes it'll narrow into something that's not recognizably a bike lane. And so sometimes that makes it a lot harder to use. Also, due to the lack of signage or painted physical designation, sometimes it was hard to tell where a bike lane was located in the first place. Additionally, there were some very easy-to-use bike lanes that intersected with roads that were very fast and definitely more dangerous. So we also want to look into how to make those intersections more easy to navigate so that the easy-to-use bike lanes stay easy-to-use throughout and don't hit those harsh points of going past the road where it's 4 or 5 lanes or 45 miles per hour or something like that. Some of the next steps in this process is to use the presented data, especially after we clean that data and look into it more, to create a project list for bike and pedestrian resources, and then also present that project list to the community for input. Additionally, there were some unconfirmed bike lanes. Sometimes it was hard to tell if a bike lane existed or not, so we're going to go back and look into those bike lanes, confirm that it exists, and then assess their level of comfort. We're also going to get into reviewing our sidewalk and crosswalk needs, which is a lot harder because there are a lot more sidewalks and a lot more intersections with crosswalks. The scheduled adoption date for this plan is June 2024. And we hope to have the project list completed by February of 2024. Are there any questions?
All right, any questions for Agent? No, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
I do have a question.
Sure.
Yes.
How do you treat the squares?
Treat the squares?
Yeah, I mean, there are bikes that ride them all the time, but there are no designation that they are bike lanes.
So according to the Athens in Motion criteria, I believe those had a level of comfort of 1 or 2 just because they were very slow. So usually the slower the speed limit, 25 miles per hour or less, it's going to be a level of comfort of 1 or 2. But then again, it may turn off or intersect with a road that might have a higher level of comfort, might be a little bit harder to use. So sometimes it was hard to assess those areas. But generally speaking, it was either a level of comfort of 1 or 2.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right.
All right, we're going to the USAD corridor study status report.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission. We appreciate this opportunity to speak with you this morning. I think I've opened the wrong attachment.
One up. No, it's one up.
Right. One up is the same one, right? They're doing the same thing over and over again. That's the same thing. There we go. I'm sorry. I was reading that as meeting minutes from another meeting. Well, again, good morning. My name is Chris Marsingham. I'm with Kimley Horn and Associates. The last time we presented to this group, we were talking about the State Route 307 corridor study. So we're happy to be back to talk about another major corridor in the community. A lot of great work has gone into this, a lot of super exciting traffic engineering, and this report is the culmination of analysis of that information, and then we have some recommendations for projects that we need to program both for the short term and for the long term. So I want to introduce Rhodes Hunt, who's also with me here today. He is going to make the majority of this presentation for you. Again, there's a lot of super nerdy stuff here, but we're going to try to keep it high level and brief this morning and answer any questions, which is probably the most important part. Rhodes is the deputy project manager on the project. Another key team player is Denise Grabowski, who helped us with our stakeholder engagement, of which there's been a great deal to this point, and we'll talk a little bit about that on later slides. Purpose today is to recap our findings and to discuss some of the recommendations that we've included, some of the major ones, of course, and then discuss the next steps moving forward as we close out the project. So with that, I'd like to bring Mr. Hunt up to cover the corridor overview and some of the details of the project.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you, Chris. So, in summary, this is a long corridor. There's a lot of variability out there. It covers many jurisdictions represented here this morning. So in total, the corridor is 12 miles long. It starts at the Effingham County, Chatham County line that you see on the left side of your screen here, runs through the town of Bloomingdale, Pooler, Garden City, Savannah, and then culminates at Burnset Boulevard near the I-516 interchange. So again, it's a very complex and rich corridor. In total, we have studied 40 intersections in depth, which represent about half of the intersections along the corridor. And then in addition, we have identified 6 distinct conceptual segments. And the purpose of that is so that we can evaluate the performance and the needs of each of those 6 segments relative to one another. So I'll scroll to the next slide. So I want to quickly recap what we found in our existing conditions based on traffic, both in the morning and the afternoon. So the key takeaway for y'all, I think, is that there are 3 key bottlenecks, those being the I-95 interchange, Dean Forest Road, and Chatham Parkway. So first at I-95, eastbound queuing in the morning tends to be about 1/2 mile in length, often extending into Old Town Pooler to South Rogers Street. And then on the southbound off-ramp, queuing typically almost extends to the I-95 main line. But even further at Dean Forest Road, queues are about 1 mile in the eastbound direction, often extending to Pine Barren Road. And then at Chatham Parkway, queues are generally about 1/4 mile, extending past Quinney Lane. Then in the PM peak, it's usually the inverse of the morning, and that the queues are now in the westbound direction as folks are leaving Savannah, but the 3 key bottlenecks are still in place. So at the I-95 interchange, queues are about 1 mile in length again, all the way to Pine Barren Road. And then we're continuing to see that queuing on the southbound off-ramp at the interchange. At Dean Forest, queues are about 3/4 miles in length, almost all the way to Griffin Avenue in the residential portion of Garden City. And then at Chatham Parkway, we see a little bit of queuing again between Quinney Lane and Junction Avenue. So let's talk a little bit about the crash history. So from 2017 to 2021, which is the most recent 5 consecutive years of data, the 12-mile corridor has had approximately 2,100 crashes, so quite a few. And so this map identifies the locations of each of those based on their severity. So again, of those 2,100 crashes, unfortunately, 3 of them did result in a fatality. And those are represented by the 3 red dots that you see on the screen. But the good news is, of those 2,100, the overwhelming majority, about 92%, are recognized or reported as property damage only, which is the least severe classification of a crash. So the big takeaway is, although there is a high frequency of crashes that we'll talk about in the next slide, they tend to be relatively minor in nature. So speaking of frequency, similar to the non-motorized plan update, this is a heat map that shows the location of crashes by frequency. So the hotter or brighter colors tend to represent where crashes are occurring most often. And as you may expect, they tend to occur most frequently at primary intersections or interchanges, like Pooler Parkway, like the I-95 interchange and Pine Barren Road. And notably, the segment between I-95 and Pine Barren, had a crash rate of more than 5 times the statewide average. So we know that crashes are a key issue on this corridor and something that we looked into very heavily as we developed our alternatives. So in summary, for our existing conditions, we determined that access management strategies should be prioritized to help mitigate some of these crash trends that we're seeing out there today, and then further capacity and safety at intersections like 307, like I-95, need to be investigated. And although we haven't talked about it much yet, transit and then bike and ped facilities should be addressed because, as most of y'all know, there are large portions of the corridor that don't have many or if any of these types of facilities today. So with that, I'll pause, see if there are any questions on the existing conditions before I jump to the recommendations.
Any questions from any? All right, okay. Go right ahead.
All right, so real quick, just a summary of our stakeholder engagement activities that we've conducted thus far. Back in December, it's hard to believe it's already been a few months, we spoke to the TCC and you, the policy board, as well as our stakeholder advisory team to discuss the existing conditions that I just went over. In May, we met with Faye and her team at Chatham Area Transit to correlate between their active studies as well as this one, just to make sure we're in alignment and talking to one another. Just last week on Tuesday at a Pooler City Hall, we held our public information open house to present these findings and our concept layouts. And I think the meeting went very well. I think that the citizens generally are very appreciative of the proactive nature of this study and of this team to identify improvements and plan for the growth that we all know is coming. So I think it went very well and was well received by the public. And then in summary, we presented these same findings to the TCC last week, and we're culminating our stakeholder engagement with this presentation this morning. So let's talk about our recommendations. So just a couple housekeeping items. We've grouped the recommendations into two primary buckets. There's short-term, which is defined as 0 to 5 years, and then long-term, which is more than 5 years. In total, we've identified 8 short-term recommendations and 22 long-term. So I certainly don't want to bore you going through all 30 of them, so I'm going to try to hit the highlights real quick. So for intersection-specific improvements, our primary and first priority is to convert the I-95 interchange from a diamond configuration to a diverging diamond, or DDI. And so we'll have a little bit more information to share about that in a couple slides. Other key improvements we've identified are auxiliary turn lanes at the intersections of Pine Barren Road and State Route 307. And we also anticipate that in Bloomingdale, the Bloomingdale Town Center driveway will meet signal warrants in the short term based upon adjacent development coming forth near the Jimmy DeLoach interchange. For access control strategies, we are recommending a corridor-wide signal retiming. The purpose of this would be to help adjacent signals coordinate as well as they can and as efficiently as they can with one another. Other improvements include, within the Chatham Parkway vicinity, a raised median from Quinney Lane to Junction Avenue. And we're also encouraging all the jurisdictions to begin planning for a raised median throughout the 12-mile stretch. So as new developments come online, we're encouraging y'all to begin enforcing developments to implement innovative intersections. And what I mean by that are intersections like an R-cut or restricted crossing U-turn or a right-in, right-out driveway. And the key is to prohibit one or more left turns because those often are higher contributors to crashes. And then finally, we are recommending a transit expansion strategy in the short term. As most of y'all know, most of the corridor is outside of the transit district, and therefore alternative funding strategies may need to be identified to help CAT expand their service along US 80. So any questions on the short-term recommendations on the board?
Yeah, Commissioner Milton.
You mentioned that the left turns you usually end up with crashes. What about the U-turns?
So they are typically not as problematic in terms of crashes because they reduce the amount of conflict points that can result. So typically when a U-turn, you're only having to deal with one decision as a driver. So they are a safety enhancement as compared to a left turn, typically because of that reduction in conflict points.
If they come out and have to make a right turn, and they have to, and they really want to make a U-turn mm-hmm. at some point. The scary part is crossing the lanes that are automatically going north and west to make a U-turn. You take 17, for instance, mm-hmm. and 17 at Derrick Inn Road. That has been a road that has been recommended for the R cut,
mm-hmm.
meaning that they can only make a right turn and then go make the U-turn.
Right.
They got to cross. If they make that right turn, that's one lane.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are two lanes that are automatically got traffic. How do they get over?
Yeah, so in that instance, I assume that they would have to make a right turn out of there again and then make a U-turn again to go back the other direction.
But they got to cross several lanes to get to that lane to make that U-turn.
That's right. But typically that is safer than having to make a left turn out of Derrick and all the way across often four or more lanes to go the opposite direction. You're kind of separating that decision, literally cutting it in half most of the time.
Okay, good.
Hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
Great.
Right there, I know you talked about one of the recommendations was diverging Diamond right there at 95. Mm-hmm. Is the traffic backed up extensively right there now?
It is. Yeah, frequently, and particularly in the PM peak, queues often extend all the way to Pine Barren Road. So that's about a mile in the westbound direction. So it's typically worse in the afternoon, but in the morning there is some queuing as well. So yes, we identify it's the area with the most traffic today by a pretty wide margin. And that's part of the reason why we ranked it as our top priority, both in the short and long term.
Okay.
Go back to you. Oh, go ahead.
Mr. Hunt, I now remember my question from the TCC. In your analysis and your evaluation, specifically on Highway 80 and Pine Barren Road, that intersection, which is now very congested, you've got truck stops and you've got a lot more truck traffic because of warehouses and stuff like that. Did y'all do any type of evaluation or recommendation that a on-off ramp be constructed at I-95 and the existing Pine Barren Road overpass to alleviate traffic such as the Amazon trucks and the Mitsubishi plant trucks and now the new warehouses going into that site? So where basically it moves some of that heavy traffic away from Highway 80, mm-hmm. and not that it's going to necessarily – but I know that that area is a lot of trucks. They're, you know, it's all commercial back there, all warehouses, supply houses and stuff like that. So did y'all even take, I don't know if this is even in the scope of the Highway 80 corridor, but the idea is to alleviate traffic off of Highway 80.
So you partly answered your own question with that. It was sort of outside the scope of the 80 study, which focused on 80. But to your point though, because of all the developments that we know are coming, we were able to factor all of that into our traffic forecasting. And so the recommendations that we're putting forth accommodate all of that growth. We also know that there is some redistribution of truck traffic today because of active construction on I-16, for example. So we were able to factor all of that in as well. So we know and we're confident that the recommendations we're putting forth will appropriately accommodate future truck traffic as well, even after all those developments are in place. But specifically for a potential interchange south of 80, between 80 or at Pine Barren, we did not evaluate that in detail.
Chairman, I had a comment also. One of the things that you said, and I wanted to take an opportunity because this has been a recent topic and we've worked closely with our partners at the county and otherwise, you talked about a particular area being, from a funding perspective, mm-hmm. being outside the tax district. Just for clarification, about 7 years ago, the county actually took an action that imposed the CAT boundaries to be countywide.
Excellent.
Now, what happens in terms of the activation of those collections within that full county boundary is done in a more opportunistic, let's call it, way in certain areas, but nonetheless, there's nothing that's really outside the district because it's all within the boundary. How taxes are then collected within that boundary is still something that's happening in an individual kind of way. But I just wanted to, we're starting to try to be sure we educate folks because there's been some different understandings about that. And I wanted to take this opportunity to clarify on that as well. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Faye. Did you have something, Chris, you want to?
Mr. Chairman.
Last question.
Okay. I just wanted to follow up on Mr. Fussell's question. The There has been an IMR completed for the Pine Barren intersection or crossing of I-95. And I may show my age here, but it was done a number of years ago when Daimler Chrysler was looking at the site that Amazon currently occupies. The findings of that were that the ramps for an interchange at that location were too close to the 95 interchange, and there was too much interaction between traffic that was exiting 95 for I-16 and the Pine Barren interchange. So an IJR, interchange justification report, was done a number of years ago for that interchange. We analyzed the Amazon traffic as it was presented in their study, which shows that that traffic is seeking 307 and I-16. So we didn't expand on the work that had been previously done. That's not to say that it doesn't need to be done at some point to be looked at again, to see if Federal Highway's position might be different.
Yeah, I just see it as you've got an existing road there. It's an overpass. It's and I do know that the road that comes along there, and I don't remember the name of it, that goes over to the Mississippi and the Amazon, right there off of Pine Barren Road is very close to the I-95. It parallels it. Now we've got retail business over there. We've got a couple of truck supply companies over there on the right-hand side as you're going north. So, I mean, I just see it as an opportunity. I'm in that area a lot, and I'm going, okay, why can't I get off here? I've got to go all the way around or either to 16. And we're you know, it's just an opportunity. I think that even a recommendation to reevaluate it would be worthwhile. So,
yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Quick question. I know the big issue, I know this doesn't go into Effingham County, but a problem that originates, I think, in Chatham County is the folks trying to avoid the weigh station on I-16. Has that been at all discussed or addressed in that you essentially are artificially increasing the traffic on 80 because folks are trying to avoid 16?
That's right. So we know there is latent demand for that truck stop, absolutely. So again, we collected counts late last year, so we know we're accounting for existing and the future traffic, assuming that truck stop stays in place. So again, to my answer to Les's question, I think the recommendations that we're putting forth, we know what the traffic is today. We have a good idea what they're going to be in the future, even if there aren't changes to that existing truck stop. And so the recommendations we're making accommodate all of that traffic that we know about. If that answers your question, Tim.
Sam,
go ahead.
And I'm assuming that you factored in, the expansion that's happening with Hyundai and going back and forth to ports and
absolutely
trying to avoid the weigh station, those kind of things.
Absolutely. Yep. And in particular, the growth rates in the short term are very strong, in excess of, I think, 1.2% west of I-95, which is pretty strong for all the reasons that you mentioned.
So in essence, taking what Ms. Faye said about the whole county is a transit district. All right. So you need to factor that in. As you said, it was outside, but it's not outside. Mm-hmm. Okay. We don't need to get into that argument about this, that, and the other about taxes and so forth. But for the purpose of the MPO, all of it should be counted as a transit district. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you all for clarifying that for us.
Okay. Anything else? All right, okay. Go ahead.
All right. So I think I was on long-term recommendations. So again, these are more than 5 years in the future. So kind of building off of that short-term recommendation for the DDI at I-95, we do anticipate there will be a need for additional capacity improvements between the short and long-term. So we'll get into that a little bit more in just a minute. Other notable improvements, we do expect additional improvements to be made at Pine Barren Road and at Chatham Parkway. And then notably, we also are recommending a new grade separation at the Dean Forest Road intersection, which is a single point urban interchange, or SPUI. This is the same recommendation that we made as part of the recently adopted State Route 307 corridor study. So again, we'll get into that a little bit more in just a second. For access control, you may have guessed we're recommending a raised median throughout the entire 12-mile stretch. And so when we looked at and tried to prioritize where would that be most beneficial and impactful, we did so based upon existing crash trends and future forecasted traffic. So based on those two factors, the top priority would be from I-95 to Pine Barren Road. The second priority would be from Pooler Parkway to I-95. And then the third would be from Chatham Parkway to Burnside Boulevard in Garden City. So for bike and pedestrian facilities, I don't want to read all these words to you, but in summary, they kind of are in accordance with the non-motorized transportation plan that was discussed a minute ago, and that the non-motorized plan identifies what they refer to as pedestrian focus areas, such as downtown Bloomingdale, Old Town Pooler, or residential Garden City. And in that plan, it says that those areas would benefit from a shared use path on both sides of US 80. So we have recommended that as a result. And then areas outside of those areas, we are recommending a shared use path on one side of US 80 and a sidewalk on the other. And then finally with transit, we're recommending again an expansion of transit service along the corridor, either from phase active studies as well as the transit expansion study recommended in the short term. So let's bring some of these to life. So this is what we're referring to as a raised median typical section. So today, US 80 tends to have a center running two-way left turn lane right down the middle. So under this scenario, that would be replaced and widened with a 20-foot wide, typically raised median with curb and gutter on both sides. And resulting from that, there would need to be a little bit of widening on 80, typically 3 to 5 feet on both sides, so not too much. And then on the left side of this typical section, we're showing a sidewalk. And then on the right side, we're showing a shared use path, which equates to the south side of US 80. So I have some exhibits from our concept layouts that we presented at the Public Information Open House last week. I know we're running short on time. So this area generally represents a raised median section in Bloomingdale. Are there any questions on this particular area of the corridor? Otherwise, I'll keep moving.
Pertaining to this section, but and along 80, you've got those turn lanes that you're getting ready to eliminate with the raised median.
Mm-hmm.
And some areas, you need that turn lane there for safety reasons,
right,
to keep traffic from backing up. So how are you going to address those?
Yeah, so at all 40 intersections that I mentioned before, we've collected turning movement counts. So we know how many cars are making turns today, and then we can project how many will be made in the future. So all of our recommendations take into account where those turns are occurring most frequently. So, for example, on this screen at Adams Road, we know that there's a lot of eastbound left turns coming into Adams. So that's an example as to why we left that turn lane there. But like some of the lesser traveled roadways, those are opportunities to help access management and reduce some of those left turns from occurring.
I know at 307, particularly in the afternoons, there's a lot of stacking going
on. Right.
Mm-hmm. in that turn lane. So it's stacked.
That's right. So in an area like that, there won't be turn lanes removed as part of this. So we'll get into the 307 area in particular in just a second. Yeah. Fear not. They'll be taken care of.
All right, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Quick question. Will the shared use path, 10-foot, is that enough space for two wheelchairs to pass each other and turn around? And will that be contiguous? Will I be able to get to Bloomingdale? And that is the vision. I want to be able to walk to Bloomingdale from Savannah City Hall under this plan.
Yes. Yep.
And I know it sounds crazy, but we all have a crazy dream, and I want to walk to Pooler.
Mm-hmm.
And will there be, in between the shared use path and the motorway, will there be a trees or protective vegetative buffer?
Yeah, so typical GDOT standards call for a 6-foot wide grass strip. And that's to account for any landscaping, relatively minimal, or utilities. So that's like the GDOT typical section. So that's for the purposes of this study, that's what we recommended. But when these projects actually go to design, opportunities to widen that, you know, could be explored. But to answer your first question, yes, that the recommendations are that there would be a shared use facility from end to end. So from Garden City all the way to Bloomingdale.
Excellent. Is it also in the scope to include and get that specific down to a tree buffer? Which I think would be most appropriate to protect. Grass won't stop a 18-wheeler too much, but a tree will certainly slow them down.
Right. I think, can you remind me, Nick, what that typical width would be? Or do you know that off the top of your head? I just know that this particular corridor, just because it's a state route, for the purposes of this study, again, this is highly conceptual. Typically, we would do something like a GDOT standard just for this purpose. But again, it's not to say that we couldn't explore wider sections when this thing actually was implemented?
Well, if I had my wish list, since we're dreaming, I'd go all in on live oaks, just because, you know, I know there's head shaking going on, but, you know, this deserves to be a prominent and is very important corridor, mm-hmm. and it deserves to be a beautiful and safe one for everybody. This won't limit traffic. It'll help regulate it and improve the flow. I just want to make sure that as we're going to experience increased development pressure and it's such a prominent corridor, that people can walk and bike there when they need to. Will your recommendations also include at each intersection? Have you considered the length of the distance between each crossing and the possibility of mid-block crossings?
Mm-hmm.
Will the intersections also have activated pedestrian buttons? And
so when on a state route, if there were a desire for something like an RRFB or rectangular rapid flashing beacon or a hawk, all of those would have to be permitted by the department were to be implemented. But with that being said, we are recommending, so actually one on this screen here, just to the east of Church Street, there is an opportunity for a hawk crossing at that location. And then similarly in Pooler, they have expressed a desire for a crossing of that nature at Chestnut Street, I believe, Tom. And so as an example, Nick, those are some areas where we have identified some of those, you know, higher pedestrian crossings and mid-block crossings, like you mentioned.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad y'all are being proactive. I'm sure we won't get very many opportunities to look at this
for sure.
So comprehensively. So I wanted to make sure that it was included in there.
Yep.
As we're gonna experience a lot more folks that want to come down to 80 and or the new 80, and make sure we get it right. Thank you.
Thank you. Good questions. Okay.
Milton.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're firing up at you now.
Hey, it's all good. We're here.
My question is, you got a lot of churches along this corridor, and they are accustomed to coming out and making a left turn if mm-hmm. necessary. If you're going to put a raised median there, did you include those people in your stakeholder meetings?
Yeah, so we have sought to engage the public with an email list as well as the public information open house. And so as part of our advertisement for the PIOH, an email blast was sent out, a news ad was sent out. So members of the public do have the opportunity to provide their input. And I would encourage everybody that there is an online survey that's active right now, that is open through the end of August. So we certainly would like to hear those sorts of opinions and feedback. If there's a consideration that we aren't as privy to. I mean, they know the corridor probably better than we do. They live on it. They drive it. So that's part of the reason why we try to open it up and engage with all of you and the public.
But you know, they don't respond until it starts happening.
So, but yeah, no, we absolutely want to help accommodate those types of businesses and facilities for sure.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Just want to add something. They did a really great job with the public information open house. They had a panoramic view of their findings from the beginning to the end, and it was very well received. He also mentioned the survey. So keeping the public informed is a very big part of what we're trying to do, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You were commissioned by Pooler to do this, right?
Correct. Yes, sir.
All right. How much did you reach out to the elected officials in Bloomingdale?
In Bloomingdale, we've coordinated with Charles Ackridge specifically. He was a member of our stakeholder advisory team from the very beginning of the project. So okay. Charles has sort of been our voice, if you will, to help distribute through the channels within Bloomingdale. Yeah, so he's kind of been our prime. But some of his, I can't remember their names, but some of his helpers and cohorts at the city have been involved as well at various times. I know, for example, we met with the police chief of the city of Bloomingdale to help discuss this hawk signal that I mentioned before. So there's an example of some of the Bloomingdale involvement that we've had.
All right, but I was talking more them reaching out to the public in Bloomingdale.
Yeah, so again, the intent would be that the stakeholder advisory team would then take sort of what we shared with them, similar to what we're sharing with you all, and help distribute that to the public through their council meetings, you know, through other channels that they may implement. So we've encouraged the stakeholders to do that, in addition to the survey that Tom mentioned.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Any other thing? Okay. Go ahead.
All right. So want to just talk for just a minute again about the I-95 interchange. I know we're running short on time. So this is arguably the most important part of the whole study. So this image here represents the long-term configuration with some additional capacity improvements. For example, we have 4 lanes in the westbound direction, whereas there are 2 today. And then specifically on the southbound off-ramp, we are recommending 3 southbound left turn lanes and then 2 southbound right turn lanes. And then the only other thing I'll mention quickly is at Moore Avenue, we are recommending that intersection to be signalized. And as part of that project, Moore Avenue could be extended to the south, kind of the bottom left corner of your screen to connect to Sand Drive to help extend the city's grid system. So any questions on I-95 area? Keep moving. Okay. All right. So real quick at the Pine Barren section on the eastern part of Pooler, I just want to mention briefly, this is where traffic is the heaviest. We know it's going to continue to stay that way. And so we are recommending a 6-lane section through this area. The typical I showed earlier only had 4, but this one has enough traffic to warrant a 6-lane section, so 3 through lanes in each direction. And then at Dean Forest Road, this was the single point urban interchange I mentioned, Michael, that I think you were asking about earlier. So the benefit of this configuration is that US 80 would be elevated up and over 307, kind of separate those heavy through movements at the existing traffic signal. And then connectivity to and from 307 would be via 4 ramps that then would meet at one single traffic signal underneath the bridge. And the benefit of this configuration is it really allows for a tightening of the ramp spacing, because as you can see in the northwest, the southwest quadrants, there are wetlands that are a factor. And then our understanding is that there is a racetrack development proposed in the southeast quadrant. So this interchange configuration really helps to minimize some of those impacts that we know are coming. Any other follow-ups here? Again, this was the same recommendation that was made as part of the 307 study. Okay. And then lastly, at Chatham Parkway, again, this was an area we identified both the short and long term. So this exhibit shows a signal at Quinney Lane, an R-cut example at Kessler Avenue, and then some minor adjustments at Chatham Parkway to help improve upon the existing intersection skew. So with that concludes our presentation. I just want to reiterate, you know, our gratitude for conducting this study. We've had a blast. We love doing this and serving you as a result. If you have any other follow-up questions, our contact info is shown here. As a reminder, the survey ends at the end of August. We are still in the draft stage, so our final report is not due until the end of September. So again, these are still, you know, bold underlined draft. We obviously want to hear from y'all. Again, y'all know the corridor better arguably than we do. So again, thank you for your time and open up for any final questions.
Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Yep, thank y'all. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go on to the.
I just want to mention the survey is you can actually access the survey from the Quorum PO website, because we do have studies. And if you go over there, you can see the US 80 study. So you can just click here to take the survey. So this is where you access the survey. Just want to let you know this.
All right. Let me just before Ms. Fay began, let me say this to MPO staff and to Wakoda knows. That study, the highway age study, I recommend that you get with those folks at Bloomingdale and let them have a town hall or information section for those folks, especially those ones who are a member of the Help me out, my West Chatham, what? All the folks in the red shirts.
The West Chatham County Alliance Coalition.
Yeah.
We can basically reach out to the manager of Bloomingdale or the administrator of Bloomingdale. You know, they get invited to these meetings as well, but I will definitely make a personal request to him as well as to the mayor to make sure that they consider doing this, because this is really important to their growth and addresses some of the areas of concern that they had when we actually did their master planning document. So I will reach out to them.
All right, reach out to them, and if you need any assistance, and get so I can get them all on the same page. Okay. All right, go ahead, Ms. Fay.
Yes, sir.
Not getting it to work.
That didn't work. Oh, this is the whole document. This is not the PowerPoint. I knew something looked kind of weird. Give us just 1 minute.
We clicked on.
Final report? So we attached the wrong report?
The PowerPoint's not in this.
Hold on.
We want the same one we gave at TCC. Yeah.
Okay, hold on. Let me just do something over here.
Thank you.
Maybe. Sorry about that. I didn't notice.
I just it was with the way it was looking on the screen. I thought there's something there.
Okay, this one.
I think so. I think it was good.
Does it open?
I got it in your download.
I'm going to download. Drop down there.
Well, thank you all very much. It is a pleasure to both serve on this board and also to have the opportunity to address you with the great news from CAT. We have completed CAT's transit master plan. At each of your spaces today is a copy of the executive summary document, hard copy, but we have also been distributing the full document plus this in an electronic version. And if you would like that for your own distribution, whether it's to your constituents or some stakeholder groups that you participate in, we're certainly glad to send that to you. But we had tremendous involvement. This is truly the community's plan. We had public meetings, focus groups, stakeholder groups. We had online surveys. We had in-person surveys. We had on-board surveys. There was a wealth of activity throughout the course of it. But this is one of the pieces that I'm proudest of is the young people in our community came out. The folks that we're doing this for, we're really not doing this for us. We're doing this for them. And so it was great to have their participation. So Chatham Connects, what this was all about. Remember, we had several initiatives ongoing at the same time. We had the Master Transit Plan, which creates this sort of 10-year specific kind of look and vision for our future, along with a vision all the way out to 2050 that's more aspirational and will become a part of the work here at the MPO in terms of the transit element of the overall plan. And we coordinated closely with the MPO and all the partners throughout. We also had an effort going on, and I don't want to use a lot of, we love our acronyms in government, but COATDP, which is the Comprehensive Operational Analysis Transit Development Plan, and all that really means is that's the piece, a separate piece that is still finishing up now, but that digs in on things like shelters and stops and frequency of routes and so forth. So, but they really, the teams worked together. We made sure that there was alignment. We eliminated duplication and made sure that the coordination of those efforts was full and complete. But that one is really a much more short term and really deals most directly with service restoration, again, in operating budget, operators, vehicles, and so forth. But the Master Transit Plan, again, our focus in terms of some of the recommendations we're going to talk through today was in that first 10-year-ish window with a aspirational vision all the way out through 2050. CAT's board and the partner agencies work to set goals, to allocate funding, and to guide spending. And you will see in this that this goes all the way back to actually over a year ago when the CAT board met and first set the goals that this master transit plan operated within. So we started about a year ago, set an ambitious schedule, but made sure that we were being really reaching out deeply into the community and thinking in creative and innovative ways about how to move CAT forward, but to do that in a way that built community, that built capacity in the community, that built lives and careers in the community. And we think that's important, and you'll see that reflected in this report. So opportunities and needs for transit. So post-COVID CAT, and you've seen this in some of our earlier reports, but it's worth refreshing. The driver shortage is having a big impact on CAT bus ridership. However, in about the last month to 6 weeks. And I hope you all are seeing this in your own workforce issues as well. We're starting to see movement at last of a return of the workforce. Yesterday, we had 15 new paratransit operators. No, I'm sorry. 12 new paratransit operators who started in training yesterday. In 5 weeks, they will be on the road providing services to those in our county, especially our seniors and those differently abled with the greatest needs. In addition to that, we have 5 fixed route operators, 3 that are in CDL training because we're now offering on-site CDL training, 2 others that already had CDLs but are doing our fixed route operator training. So over the next 5 weeks, there'll be 5 more fixed route operators. That is a phenomenal amount of workforce development that's going on in a pretty short period of time. So I'm hoping that driver shortage, which is one of, I think, our 2 highest priorities, workforce development, that is going to be key to CAT moving forward to its very bright future, we're starting to see movement there. 8 core bus routes that carry 80% of all riders. Fastest growing areas are outside of CAT's present service areas, and we all know what that looks like. Growth is occurring all around us, both inside Chatham County in lots of key areas, even across over on Hutchison Island, but certainly in the sort of regional area around us. Partners have been key to CAT success. We enjoy some of the most wonderful partnerships of anyone in our industry. Our partnership with the county, our partnership with cities, our partnership with the state, and that relationship that we enjoy that is really remarkable. And certainly we have really enjoyed a brand revival with our federal partners, and we're excited about that. CAT's most successful services operate zero fare, by most successful being some of our highest ridership routes. So the DOT shuttle that you know that operates around Forsyth Park into downtown over to Carver Village and Cloverdale and up to Victory now. That particular service, as well as, of course, the ferries. And ferries serve people who are getting to jobs, also people, local folk who are getting to meetings. And then, of course, that hospitality industry that is a key part of our economic drivers here. So those are some of our most successful, but we also have plans that we're going to talk a little bit about that I think are really going to, that's where you're going to see the growth in what CAT is and can be. Operating costs are rising faster than revenues, and historic underinvestment in capital means investments are needed. Now, we'll tell you that that situation is one that is very common to transit systems across the country right now. And I think there's actually sort of 2 parts to it, and we're going to talk about it. One, and I think for us, and this is our other, so I have 2 highest priorities as CEO in terms of how we move this forward. I talked about workforce development already. The other is reliable local funding. In order to be really competitive and to leverage all of the federal and other state opportunities that are out there, we've got to have local funding. Again, we enjoy such a tremendous partnership now, whether it's SPLOST funds or funding that we get through SAMI with the room fees and so forth, those kinds of things. However, having a really consistent, reliable funding source, that local funding source to be able to leverage all that is going to be critical to our future. Driver shortages have had a big impact. We just talked about that. Again, the 8 core bus routes that carry 80% of our riders. On the Abercorn and Waters routes, which are 2 of our highest volume routes, and those are fared routes. On those routes, we also have a project going underway right now, 100% funded project with GDOT and with the City of Savannah to do transit signal prioritization in those corridors. And that will not only give a boost to the transit operation in those corridors, but it will also smooth overall traffic flow. So we're excited about that. Transitioned fixed route service to micro transit where it makes sense is going to be a key part of our future. So there was a softening in the transit market, transit ridership, even before COVID. COVID certainly drove a sharp point into that. But even before that, and I would suggest to you that it is because of the dramatic rise in Uber and Lyft riders. That customized trip where you can go right there on an app, you can call up the trip you need, they'll pick you up at the certain point where you are, they'll take you to the point where you need to go, and it's all on your time and your way. That is the future. And transit as an industry is learning to adapt that. And CAT, I'm so proud to report, is really on the cutting edge of that with the SMART grant that we won earlier in the year that's going to start two micro transit zones in West Chatham that are going to serve those areas where we're seeing growth in jobs. So we're making sure that we're getting our people have the opportunity to get to jobs easily and effectively, especially around Amazon and some of these other, you know, sort of emerging job opportunities now and all the growth just generally West Chatham. And then also we'll have a prototype zero fare zone that will be in East Savannah and will serve the village of tiny homes where the veterans are, as well as the expansion of that tiny village. So fixed route bus service being more efficient in higher density areas, cost per passenger increases when the ridership is low. So again, driving those ridership metrics is going to be really important. And then micro transit really is the key to our future. It's hard to it's hard to underemphasize how much emphasis we're placing on that. Small investments in passenger facilities can make a big difference. We know that where's your transit trip, really? Where do you start your transit trip? It's not when you step on the bus or step into the shuttle or step into one of our vans, or on one of our ferries even. It's where you wait. And it needs to be a respectful and dignified, safe and reliable wait there as you start your trip. One of the things that we have underway right now is a complete inventory of all 1,100 or so stops and shelters throughout the entire county. And we're looking at those in terms of condition, building out a GIS system to manage them, installation, expansion of the installation of solar lighting, refreshing those, figuring out where there are places. And I see it, and I know you do. There are certainly some key, highly visible corridors in the area where you see people waiting and they're waiting at just the sign. And there's maybe not even a waste receptacle, but there's certainly not a place to sit. And there's not a place to take a little bit of cover if the weather comes upon you. So we're looking at all those things and figuring out how do we make this work most effectively. Fastest growing areas are outside of CAT's current service area. We talked a little bit about earlier about, you know, what the CAT district is. We recently, you know, expanded service in Garden City, and we have a service expansion that is in the planning stages but headed for activation right after the first of the year, the first quarter of next year in Port Wentworth. So we are excited again about those kinds of opportunities. We're also negotiating with Amazon, and we also, one of the things that I know everyone's interested in is, so what's happening with Hyundai? We are very excited. We have had multiple partnership meetings with Hyundai, and yesterday the CAT board acted on the approval of an NDA to allow Hyundai to share more information with us that we can use in more detailed service planning to make sure, again, that we're thinking about how Commuter Express and Vanpools can get people, our folk in Chatham County, to those jobs there, and also how it might be able to serve this regional area that we are clearly growing into. Partnerships have created some of CAT's most successful services. And again, I will say, I think some of our most successful partnerships are with our local entities. We certainly appreciate our partnerships with our state and federal partners. They are key as well. But the partnerships that we have with all of you are the drivers of our success, because CAT is your system. Yeah, we all own this, and we are all committed to it moving forward. Potential for added partnerships. We talked about these growth in employer partnerships, but also schools, community colleges, and universities. We have restored the Candler route that also serves Savannah State. We have ongoing negotiations with the colleges and universities on a future UPass program, or re-implementing a UPass program. And we also did a specific dedicated component of work in this master transit plan to aligning our fixed routes in a way that the fixed routes can help take some of the burden off the school bus, because they have the same workforce shortages that we've been dealing with, to help offer another opportunity for students to be able to get to school on our fixed route system. And not only that, but for those, the high school kids to be able, when they're in dual degree programs at Savannah State, at Georgia Southern, at Savannah Tech, that they have a way at that time of the day when they might need to take a dual degree program class, that they have a reliable way to get there. So goals, priorities, I mentioned that at the very beginning of this, CATS Board of Directors set forward the strategic priorities, and we were, you know, looking at service expansion, looking at reliability and connections, improving the passenger experience, because everything now really is about the experience, reducing travel time. And one of the things that we carried forward in every single thing we did was a focus on equity. How are we making sure that we are serving all in the community? How are we making sure that we're understanding the needs of all, and particularly the needs of those that are the greatest? Community priorities, we heard folk loud and clear, fix that unreliability in our service, increase service frequency, and we are certainly moving in that direction, increasing our service levels, improving those bus stops. Remember, it's back to where you wait, feeling that you're waiting in a good and reliable and safe and well-lit place, improving school transportation options, and then piloting microtransit. Microtransit was, by the way, in the community conversations, the stakeholder groups, the surveys that we did, microtransit was just a big point of interest for folks. And I was surprised at how many people said, I actually would rather take microtransit if it were available than maybe take an Uber and Lyft trip, because I'm going to know it's CAT, and I'm going to know that there's a CAT-trained operator that's operating the service, and I'm going to know the brand behind it, and I'm going to know that you have a full group of maintenance folks that are making sure the vehicles are maintained well and so forth. So it was interesting to hear some of those perspectives from the community. Centering investments in equity, again, as I said, these are things that we've looked at. We were very specific about those that have been disproportionately burdened by current and past decisions, and some of the metric moves that you will see with the improvement of services, again, which is dependent upon resourcing and community support and all those kinds of things, but with things that are in here that we are proposing to implement and the speed at which we can do that, the amount of change that we make in the equity space across the county is absolutely remarkable, and particularly so in the area of access to jobs. Ensure that the investments prioritize all those connections, including education, jobs, and healthcare, the things everybody has to have a successful life. Evaluating programmatic strategies, we looked at the program with these three key questions in mind. How are we increasing the access, again, to jobs, health, education, and healthcare? How are we increasing affordable and sustainable transportation options? And how are we increasing our presence in the community in a way that we can continue to provide these important long-term solutions? The Master Transit Plan has a short, medium, and long-term strategy. Again, I mentioned earlier, we've got prioritized investment strategies for the next 10 to 15 years, along with some visionary forecasting beyond that. The strategies are designed to achieve equitable outcomes. The short term, and we looked at that sort of as 2024 to 2027, includes expanding fixed route bus service in the areas that are noted here, using those SMART grant funds. And you will recall how highly competitive that first round of SMART grants was. We were one of only 59 in the country that was awarded, one of only 7 that were transit related, and one of only 4 that went to a transit system proper. And we were the very first press conference that the folks at USDOT came down to note what this program was all about. We're very proud of that, and we're very proud of what those first 3 microtransit zones are going to represent for Chatham County and what it means for the growth of the CAT system in the future. And that was 100% funding, $1.2 million and 100% funding, but the most important part of it is we do really well in this first prototype demonstration phase of that project, and we qualify. We'll be one of only 59 that will have the opportunity to go on and compete for phase 2. And phase 2 is where there's some really big dollars. So we are on top of, you'll see the first microtransit service start rolling out by March. Should be around March of next year. Investing in bus stops and passenger amenities and forming partnerships, including, you heard me mention earlier, van pools, a lot of interest in those with folks like Amazon and Hyundai and so forth. Medium term, 2028 to 2030, continuing our investment in fixed route, especially in our frequent service corridors. operating most of the routes on a 30-minute all day. That'll be a dramatic improvement for us. Right now, a lot of our routes are still on 1 hour. It's hard to think that you have reliable service when you're still at 1 hour. It's just a long time for people to wait, especially if you're trying to make connections and get to a job in particular or to a healthcare appointment or anything that requires you to be there at a specific time. Continue to expand microtransit so it starts to grow out further. And I think microtransit is also going to be one of those things that some areas that might not be as favorably disposed towards fixed route expansion might look at microtransit and go, that, yeah, I like that. Let's get some of that over here. So we believe that that's going to be a real important part of service expansion. Continuing investments in the bus stops and passenger amenities, and also, and this will actually probably, depending on how our continued negotiations go, that commuter express bus service may start sooner. We are looking at coordination with the state on how a bus on shoulders operation would work as well. Longer term, 2031 to 2035 and beyond, continuing investment in the fixed route service, the full network of microtransit zone, and you can see those throughout, and then adding more commuter express bus routes. Marine services, we all know our beloved ferries. The four ladies really are headed for a well-deserved retirement. At least three of them very, very, very soon. We should have two new hybrid ferries that will be here in the spring. We get every single Friday, we get pictures of their progress from the shipyard that they're being built at in New York. They actually came down this past week and we started looking at finishes, and they wanted to actually go ride our routes to see, kind of understand how the operations characteristics that we have that these vessels would be operating within. So again, we're very excited, but we'll be replacing three of those with hybrid vessels soon. We also, the grants that you've seen come through this MPO, we have an invitation out to bid right now for the new dock expansion down on the west side at near Plant Riverside, and also the most, maybe one of the most needed things we have right now is a maintenance facility for the ferries, which will be over on Hutchison Island. Again, that was a great partnership with the county in terms of the property there that's going to be located on. But super excited, and on the dock, a great partnership with the city in terms of the property there. But that is absolutely critical. If you have been over and seen our current maintenance facility, and I use that term really loosely, if you go in the parking deck of the Westin, or actually of the convention center, you will see a roped off area, and you'll see some stuff sitting in the roped off area. And that's our maintenance facility. So it's about six or seven parking spaces right now. So this is much needed, especially with the new ladies coming in that are going to need to be. We've got to be sure that maintenance is key to moving their successful stories forward as well. Medium term, an additional ferry vessel expansion. Now, I mentioned in the earlier one, so we've got two vessels that are coming in the spring. We have a third that we are looking to fill. We've got a fairly small gap still in local funding match needed to get the third moving forward. We've got it ready to go to bid, but we can't put it out till we've got that identified, and we're working on that now. But it is really important we get that one out, because like I said, three of the ladies are truly at the end of their useful life. And then the fourth has about another 10 years left. And so that gives us some breathing room to begin to look toward a fifth vessel that becomes the way that we begin to expand service. Longer term, of course, additional ferry vessels and some additional service expansion based upon all the growth that's occurring in this area. Microtransit, a spotlight on mobility on demand. You can see the short term, medium term, and long term visions for each of those. Again, I think microtransit is going to be a game changer for us. It is the Uber Lyft of transit, and it does afford that opportunity for those customized trips that we know that the public wants, and that it's kind of the lifestyle, if you will, that all of us have now. So we're used to doing things on our phones, and we're used to thinking that we should be able to get to, you know, call it whatever we need whenever we need it, and it either appears at our door or takes us to where we need to go. a spotlight on equitable service. And so this is one of the things that I was mentioning earlier in terms of the short-term restoration of our service to previous levels, increase in people and jobs with access to transit with a 30-minute frequency, including some of our investments in our fixed route, but also the new micro transit zones, in the medium term, the introduction of frequent corridors and extended evening and weekend spans, and of course, additional coverage and so forth in the longer term. But you can start to see where we're moving the metrics of populations that are within a half a mile of transit service and jobs that are within a half a mile of transit service. The high school connections, again, super important. Investing in our young people, again, this is who we really, like I said earlier, this is who we do this for. It's for their future. And they were remarkable participants in this process. And in addition to aligning some of our services to help complement the needs at the high schools in particular, we also looked at short, medium, and long term, and the use of how micro transit can be a part of helping our at both the public or the K through 12 and the college and technical school levels for connectivity. Again, just mentioned college and university connections, short, medium, and long term, and you can see the improvements there that we are undertaking, both especially near term with the Georgia Southern Armstrong campus, extending that Fort Bernard service there, improving the Route 31 from a 60-minute to a 30-minute frequency, and Savannah Tech Route 4 improving from 120 to 60 minutes. I should also mention that on Savannah Tech, part of our SMART grant application was part of our funding request in that SMART grant application was a grant that we are making to Savannah Tech to and their partnership with Hyundai to do the electric charging infrastructure and electric vehicle training for our maintenance folks. Again, we're building careers. We're building community capacity. And we want to leverage what's happening already with institutions like Savannah Tech and with partnerships like Hyundai into our partnerships and to use the funding that we've been successful in bringing to the table to help make those connections. Achieving the master transit plan, you know, this is going to be a overtime thing. You can see the kinds of things that we're focused on in terms of restoring and expanding. Where CAT is on the right path. So we are excited. We had a really successful 15 months or so, 14 to 15 months, where, as you've probably heard us say, we brought in $14 million in 14 months of new funding to CAT in competitive discretionary funds alone. And that was because we have great partnerships. And we have been advancing the CAT brand, but we're smart about what we go after. We don't go after everything. We're very strategic. But we're making sure that it counts towards this vision of what we want CAT to be so that CAT can meet the Savannah and Chatham counties mobility demands into FY27 and beyond. We know our operating revenues have not kept pace. And we're going to have to look at additional local support. I know that there's lots of community conversations around things like T-Splice. That's going to be incredibly important to us, and particularly on the operating side, because we've got lots of sources for capital, but the operating is always a bit of a challenge. Achieving the master transit plan, if you look at us over that out to 2050, we would double in size. State and federal grants are still going to continue to be important, and being smart and successful with those is very important, and the local and regional funding that's going to be needed to make that match. And then there was a suggestion to look at when we start to look at what all is going on around us, and particularly the growth that's occurring in our neighbors around us. This is something that at some point, especially with this would absolutely be under the county's leadership, but conversations around, do we need a more regional look at how transit is delivered? We coordinate with our partners over at the Coastal Development Commission. They are a rural transit provider, but the kind of the capacity that we have in maintenance facilities and so forth well positions us to be able to do these things like commuter express or van pools and those kinds of things that some of our partners around us might not be able to do as successfully. So again, that's just that's sort of put out there as a future conversation point, but that would be led completely locally in terms of how that conversation might transpire. Again, we've got a almost a activated, this is a tool that we've used very successfully in some other communities as well, is the short-term, mid-term, and longer-term funding opportunities. And I'll go back to the first one, but you can see in each one we turn on more things because there's more things that we're building on and more things that become opportunistically available to us to explore. And the kinds and everything in this in these funding strategies is matched back to the projects that are in the master transit plan. Ann, thank you very much. I appreciate it. We are incredibly CAT proud of what we've done here with this. We are proud of where we are moving and where we were going, and we thank you deeply, each and every one of you, for what you do to help make us successful. So thank you.
All right, any questions?
I have one question, Mr.
One question.
Whenever I try to use the CAT app, it fails. So how much energy have y'all devoted to that and not trying to reinvent the wheel? We'll look at other apps that are used in other, you know, in the metro in Atlanta and stuff like that for the availability of CAT and how much longer do I have to wait kind of thing. So
hopefully not that much longer. And I appreciate you. As we had Leadership Savannah met, the class came by to visit with us yesterday and that got brought up there as well. There is a problem. It's actually not with the app, but it's with some of the back office, if you will, innards of the system. And we are working closely with our provider and with, there's a couple of different, interfacing software programs that are coming together, and there's a glitch occurring in there, but it is our priority right now. Mark, who is our IT innovation manager, this is his highest priority to solve, and I think you'll see a solution. I want to say no later than a month from now. I hope sooner than that, but I think you'll start to see it being much more reliable all the time because I think we're starting to figure out where the glitch is in amongst all the interfacing systems.
Okay, and again,
but thank very you good. For asking that because we get asked that a lot.
Yeah, good presentation as always. Thanks.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Faye, that was an outstanding presentation, and I wish you congratulations on a multi-year effort. This was an endeavor that we know that you took on and dusted off from the very beginning, and we've seen you and personally witnessed the public engagement strategies with the entire community, the youth, that's out there, elected officials, whether or not they're in the CAT system or if ands or buts, and a truly comprehensive strategy. You already know this, so I'm preaching to the choir, but you are, and Chatham Area Transit is the most important thing that we have going to help us determine the growth and development pattern and address the challenges of tomorrow. How we grow and how we get out of the housing shortage and the crisis, the advent of the warehouse explosion, and the economic opportunities that are right in front of us, the tsunami that's about to hit, you are the tip of the spear to help us address those challenges and how people have that freedom of choice and freedom of mobility to get where they need to be. I'm glad that you highlighted, the partnerships and service enhancements. What are the things that cities can do to help support this mission and the new vision for the future?
So one of the things that we are actually working with the MPC and with Melanie on right now, as well as with the city of Savannah directly, is having a seat at the table when these developments are being considered. So if we're there from the beginning, the most successful transit systems and projects aren't shoehorned in after the fact. They are built in, they're cooked in on the front end. They're an essential ingredient. And the notion that we're there to be able to point out where pedestrian interface, because what is every transit patron? They're a pedestrian. That's how they got to the transit system. So all the transit infrastructure is incredibly important to us. Crosswalks are important to us. Curb cuts are important to us. Access management is important to us. And thinking about how you incorporate stops and shelters and so forth as a part of the development commitment of a particular permitting process, site plan review, all that kind of thing. That's one of the biggest things that all local governments can do to help us is give us a seat at that table and give us an opportunity to comment on those things in a way that they can at least be thoughtfully considered as we're moving forward.
Well, that's an excellent suggestion, and particularly regarding funding. I mean, you can make a dollar holler. We need to absolutely do everything in our power to make sure that you have enough sustaining local funding, because one day the grant bounty embarrassment of riches that we're experiencing right now, one day that those grant funds are going to run out. What are the best things that we can do today to help prepare you for the future, to help cover that gap, to make sure we don't find ourselves in crunch time in a couple of years?
Well, you're giving me the chance to get on my soapbox one more time. The most important thing to us right now is a reliable local funding structure. And why is that? Grants don't cover operating things. They cover capital things. Everybody loves to give you a grant that they can come and cut ribbons on. And that's right. That's how that works. It's been working that way now for a long, 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 long time. But the notion that in order for CAT to prosper and succeed and to do all the things that we've committed to here and that we know will make this community prosper and will give that next generation of folks the better life, a reliable local funding source has got to be put in place that's not as much we're very grateful for everything we get now. And it's absolutely essential, everything we get now. But I think we all know that it's just like anyone's budget. If you've got a reliable funding source coming in, you can plan, you can execute, you can develop, you can do all those things, right? But if you're constantly having to chase the dollar or figure out where it's going to come or asking and hoping for an approval, when that's happening all the time, it just makes it hard to really, meet the future. And we are committed to doing that. But I'll tell you the important thing too is in order to do that, you all have to look at us and go, I know that if we award CAT dollars, local dollars, because that's the ones I'm preaching about right now. If we award CAT local dollars, they're going to put them to good use. I'm going to see the projects delivered successfully and on time. It's going to perform the way they told me it was. And I think that we are making ourselves and have made ourselves a worthy partner for investment. And I also think that's part of why we've been really successful on the federal and state side also. Of course, we have lots of friends advocating for us too, like all of you all. But that local funding piece, earning your trust and confidence and then executing on those things when we make the ask and you feeling that you can do that, that's just everything.
Well, thank you so much. And you've been a stellar partner. We're very proud of, if this is right, by the slide, 40% of the riders are from partnerships, which is just incredible. And congratulations. And well
done.
Thank
you.
All right. Thank you, ma'am.
All right.
Appreciate it. Let's move on. Ms. Waco. You got a TIP?
Okay. Just to move back. Where's my? Okay. The transportation improvement program was supposedly to be adopted in August, but we are late on that. I did tell you about the reasons because we were still expecting the updated revenues from GDOT and then updated information from CAT. Glad to let you know that we did receive updated revenues from GDOT and then some updated information from CAT. But the revenues, the highway revenues, is less than what I expected because of the funding swap. I told you that we used the COVID relief funds, so we should release about $2 million of combined Y230 and Y301 funds back to the pot, but when I received the updated revenue, it's actually is less. So we didn't get that extra boost, but I'm going to start to develop the tip probably at this meeting and then hopefully have the second draft done probably by the end of the month. So FHW, GDOT, and FTA can review that information. And then in September, we will go through the 30-day public involvement program and then in October, we were targeting for October adoption at this time.
All right, let's move on to the urban flooding.
Hi, everyone. Anna McQuarrie. I took over the urban flood model project in June, so I've had some time to get more familiar and work with our UGA consultant team. In July, the team delivered the Task 2.1, the Stormwater Management Model, or SWIM, and also demonstrated their use for me in EPA software. So these are available on the MPO website. The hydrographs, which are the outcomes of the SWIM, are expected to be submitted by the end of the month. The other tasks, such as the social vulnerability metrics, financial stewardship, and project prioritization tool, are expected closer to October, with the final deliverables being submitted by October 31st. And so I just want to show you where you can see the deliverables on the website. So if we go to the flood model tools page on the core MPO website, you can see that there is an explanation of what the SWIM is, a zip file with the actual models, and then a link to the EPA website where you can actually download this software to view it in for free. One of the great advantages of using this software is that it is free and available. So just quickly, I want to show you what a SWIM looks like. Again, this is just the model itself, and the outcomes in the report and the hydrographs, which are the outcomes essentially, are coming at the end of this month. So this is just kind of what they're using to formulate this report. I know there will be a lot of questions, but I wanted you to be able to see what I'm talking about when I say the word or acronym SWIM. All right, great. So once you download the software and upload one of the files in, this is a drainage basin that you're looking at, and this specifically is the downtown area of Savannah. And so just so you know, the SWIM is used throughout the world for planning, analysis, and design related to stormwater runoff, combined and sanitary sewers and other drainage systems. EPA developed this to help support local, state, and national stormwater management objectives to reduce runoff through infiltration and retention and help to reduce discharges that cause impairment of water bodies. So it's used for a variety of purposes. This specific one, what you're seeing, it's a one-dimensional model, so it's not necessarily a flood map, but it can give us an approximation of where there will be floods. Its specific use is to understand the flow and depth of flooding of manholes based on a specific flood event, specifically for 10-year and 25-year rainfalls. So they're working with six different drainage basins, and then once you open up a drainage basin, which you're looking at here, you can see these little rain clouds, which will show either 10 or 25-year events. There are outfall nodes, manholes, which are your little dots here. These lines are pipes. And then the hashed areas are the watershed where water will fall and go to the pipes as surface runoff. And essentially, this is simulating a compound flood event by combining fluvial and coastal flooding in a single simulation for Savannah's 10 and 25-year storm events. And the outcome, which we'll get in our hydrographs in this next report, it's going to produce four different simulation results for the hydrographs. But if you want to right now, you could have, if you have a stormwater engineer or you personally want to play with this, it's great because you can change different data fields. So for example, you could change rainfall, you could change the tides information, sea level rise, and they also have land use in there. But for the area in which this model was, the land use is expected to stay developed, so it's not really going to change too much. And the outcome of this, again, is coming at the end of this month. But when I say SWIM, this is what I'm talking about. And I believe we have Dr. Santiago Collazo online right now. So if you have any questions, he developed the SWIM. And so the TCC offered a couple good questions asking about different bottlenecks, how this can be used with GIS, showing the geography as well, how we could show this with transportation systems in GIS, and how we could potentially extend it into Bryan and Effingham counties. So if you have any questions,
All right, any questions? No.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Yes, just a quick question. Will this be publicly available so that we can mess around, click some stuff, and try different capabilities?
Yes, of course. And it is already. So again, this is on the CORE MPO website on the flooding dynamic modeling for optimized planning of CORE MPO transportation infrastructure systems on the website. And so you can download all of this. And it has that link to the EPA website where you can download the software and it has the manual.
It's on it. It's on it.
Yeah.
All right.
Just don't break it.
Not if you break it, the other people are. Put it in the budget because you broke it. All right, anything else?
I just wanted to say, if I may, Mr. Chairman, that, as you know, this is kind of one of my passion projects. And the other component of this is that hopefully we'll be able to deal with the financial component so that you could plug it into your capital improvements plans regionally as we move forward with developing, because just because something happens in Effingham County does not mean that it doesn't impact Chatham as well as the city of Savannah. And just also want to give a shout out to for Anna coming in and just aggressively tackling this project and helping to move it along. So cool. Thank you for giving me this moment in time.
Thank you. Wakoda? Membership dues?
Okay, this item, everybody's interested. As you all know that we are doing the reapportionment process. So the Corn Peel Board has already approved the boundary. So the next step, the boundary would be the Appendix A of the MOU. And the Appendix B is the fee structure. We actually did a workshop on the fee structure. And then the next step is to revise the MOU to finalize the language and then get signatures by all the participating agencies. And then also finalize our bylaws, and then we will forward everything to GDOT, and then the GDOT commissioner will sign, and then after that signature, they will send everything to the governor's office, and then hopefully we hope to get all of the signatures from all of you probably no later than the middle of November, so that we can forward everything to GDOT. So hopefully we will have the governor's signature in December. So now I'm just going to delve more into this MOU, because I do have the MOU drafted over here. So if you take a look, and I have highlighted everything that I've changed in red. So if you see the participating agencies, I did include in Bryan County, I included the Pembroke and the Bryan County, because previously it was only Richmond Hill. Effingham County still with all Effingham County also included Guyton, Rincon, and Springfield in these participating agencies. And for Chatham County, still Chatham County and its municipalities, the modal representatives, CAT, GPA, and Airport Commission, and the GDOT. And then you can see this is the boundary. So the boundary will be all of Chatham County, the portion of Effingham County, south of State Road 119, and then Bryan County would be all of Bryan County outside of Fort Stewart. And that is outlined in Appendix A. And then we also outline everybody's responsibilities and roles and responsibilities. So you need to, after this meeting, we will send this to you so you can take a look at this, dig into the language for all the municipalities, what your roles and responsibilities are. And we also, we are trying to consolidate ACAT and the Citizens Advisory Committee into a Transportation Equity and Public Involvement Advisory Committee. So we actually revised the language over here. So in the future, they still participating in the MPO's long range transportation planning process, but their agenda probably would be just a duplicate of MPO or TCC agendas. So those might be informational items, but they will have a specific missions. Probably if they want to probably provide some comments on like Title VI related, or the citizens' participation in certain projects. For example, the Faye was talking about probably provide transportation to the Hyundai plant. So they might be able to have some input. So there will be more focused agenda. And then the other way that we want to do is the Bike and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. Aisha has been presenting you the non-motorized transportation plan, but she also told you that in the current plan, we have more than 400 projects, but it takes us a while to figure out where they are, whether they have been implemented. So the purpose of establishing this committee, the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee, is to keep tracking of all those projects to see whether they're implemented. And if they haven't been implemented, what are the highest priorities and what are the grand opportunities that we can pursue? So they will have their own designated agenda as well. So these would be the changes. And then we also wanted the MPO, we missed something, that we, MPO's language, we didn't include the Title VI and EJ, so we added that language over there. Another part of the comment that we would need from you is particularly regarding the fee structure. So as you can see, it's at the end. It's Appendix B. So Appendix A is the boundary, and Appendix B, this is the description that we have, currently have the fee structure. So review this methodology. We did give you a presentation. We had a workshop on that. And actually, after the TCC meeting, Les was talking to me, says, oh, the number probably don't look right because your number looks so small than what we're already paying. So what we presented to you was just a methodology. So that was based on the UP 2024 UPWP. Normally the UPWP number, the staff budget, that is just UPWP number. The total budget is actually also include the overhead cost. So the UPWP number is about 45%, and then the overhead cost is about 55%. I did recalculate. I have the numbers. They are currently being reviewed by Melanie and Pam, our finance department. So because they want to make sure it makes more sense before I send it to you. But I just want to let you know that I do have that information available. So what you want to, we want you to review is like, just to look at this methodology and see whether it still makes sense. So we propose that each government agency still like has a base amount of $1,000. For Bryan County, FM County, and Chatham County, we want you to let us know how you want to split the funds. For Bryan County, I know Les mentioned that Richmond Hill wants to have a meeting with Bryan County to see how they split that membership dues. And Chatham County currently still pays 25%. Of the municipalities fees, and the municipalities pay 75%. So take a look at this. Are you still okay with this? And also Effingham County, I know Tim mentioned that the county might pay all of it, but do you want to like have a meeting with the Rincon or bigger municipalities to decide how you split this? So just let us know, because we need to include all that language into this. This is the official document. So you will take a look at this. And also for the modal representatives, currently we're using 70th percentile. During the presentation, I showed you the numbers. If we do 65th percentile, what the numbers will look like. So you can just take a look at that and let us know what you think. And then we probably will have, another workshop probably, with you before we actually finally adopt this. And then another thing is that we are going to work on the bylaws as well. The bylaws will have more detailed information about how the each committee is structured and how often they meet and how they conduct the meetings. So we're still working on that. So after we get all that information, we're probably the first step, we're going to have the working group. Remember, we established a working group. So the working group will go through all of this. And when the working group feels that it's okay to present it to you, we probably will schedule a workshop with you so that we can go over all of this and we all agree. And then we put the language finalized over here, and then we will put it on the agenda in October. Any questions?
Questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
A quick question regarding fee contributions from the modal authorities. It says Chatham Area Transit, Georgia Ports, and Savannah Airport Commission would contribute a fixed amount based on the 70th percentile of the county's municipalities contributions. is this the same flat for all three entities?
Yes.
But they don't have the same capacities.
Currently GPA doesn't pay. So we actually have the calculations based on whether GPA pays. So that impacts everybody's fee structure, but we are still working with GPA to make sure they pay.
I want to make sure that we can structure it in such a way that everybody's paying their fair share, but that they, you know, we're not overburdening Chatham Area Transit, which does not have the same fiscal capacity as the other two entities. I mean, one, the GPA is, they're doing great, you know, and the airport's doing just fine, you know, they're money making, you know, revenue positive, profit making entities that are out there, or, you know, at least for the GPA, that's quasi governmental, and they're doing great. I would love to have them chip in, but, you know, I'm thinking about Chatham Area Transit over here.
This is based on the current MOU, the fee structure collection. But if you have any ideas, it would suggest like GPA pays, 80% percentile, or CAT pays like 60. I mean, this is still in discussion.
Okay.
Can we sit? What we'd like to do is just sit down and talk with you. I know that this is not a working session, but if we could sit down and talk with you, and I know we saw those numbers, we participated in that workshop, but I agree, and I appreciate the alderman here bringing it up. I do think that there's some real difference between the entities. We'd just like to talk about it.
And if I may, just to let you know, I've been talking with the Georgia Ports Authority. As you know, or some of you might not know, they haven't paid dues. They just don't pay dues. And I've had some really productive conversations with Jamie, who's their CAO, about them starting to pay or starting to make contributions. We're looking at how that makes sense to them. And when we were working on dealing with the dues formula with regards to the other transportation entities, especially for CAT, we did look at having a different percentage for the formula. So I don't want you to think that we have not been thinking about that. If GPA participates, then everybody's dues end up being adjusted and going down. But we are having, I've been having some very productive conversations with them and hoping that they will come to the table. But we are looking at the percentages for CAT, because we know that you are and we'll continue to deal with looking for funding.
No, I appreciate that very much, Melanie. And I understand the initiative and the focus with the Georgia Ports Authority and getting them to activate and so forth. That's all great. It's just Chatham Area Transit Authority is a really different entity from either GPA or the Savannah Airport Commission. And so just figuring out how to think about that in a way that brings some, you know, that there, it's still fair.
Mm-hmm.
And I get, it's not that we wouldn't want to participate. Obviously we do, but it's making it, I mean, we're not on the same plane with the others. And so we just need to figure that out. Thank you.
Yeah, after this meeting, we will send you the draft. This is a very preliminary draft MOU. And then also, when Melanie and Pam are okay with the numbers, I will send you the numbers as well. So take a look at that and let us know what you think. And if we need to schedule individual meetings with you, work sessions with you, we will do that. But what I'm thinking is that we will have like overall workshop with all the members, so that we are all in the same room and talk about it. But if we need to schedule individual meetings, we will do that.
And we're going to get the city to help them meet their goal.
Yeah. I do have a question, and that is, do we have a timeline for when we will have the revised numbers available to have their discussions?
I'm going to get with Wakoda. Wanted to just have her and the team kind of introduce this information to you after the workshops. We're hoping to have this done within the next week and a half or so, because one of the things that if you go back and look at the timeline, if you could go back into the agenda of the timeline, is that we need to have this approved, by the MOU done no later than mid-November, because we've got to get it sent off to the governor's office, and you've got holidays and everybody has different meeting schedules and different meeting times. So the sooner that we can get this finalized, the sooner that we'll be able to move forward with having the workshops and do whatever is needed with your elected officials, so that we can get buy-in to to have this concluded.
Just anything else?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question so I can understand the process here. So this workshop that we're talking about, it's going to be all encompassing. It's going to be the fee structure, and the bylaws.
Yeah.
We
hope to have that probably in September, or early October, because, we are having the next Cornfield board meeting on November the 1st.
Okay.
So we want to make sure everybody's okay with everything before we adopt it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
All right. Anything else? Thank you, ma'am. Let's move on.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. We got a reappointment set report. That's part of what you just said.
I'm done. I think the next one is informational items.
All right. GDOT, are they on the line? Don't we have somebody from GDOT on?
Ted Hicks was not prepared to present this, and Katie's not online. So
we can go past GDOT?
Yes, sir.
All right. Okay. Chatham County? Yeah.
Good afternoon to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So on this report, we've been making progress on a lot of these projects. The only ones I wanted to highlight today, Waltar Road slope stabilization on here. We did not receive any bids for this project, so we need to reevaluate this and see what we can do to get this project out again. And then I added local construction projects. We have a traffic signal project on Johnny Mercer at Lyman Hall Road for Long Point Subdivision. Notice to proceed on that one will go out the first week of September. Quaco Road clearing, that contract has gone out. So that's going ahead and getting the clearing done so that utilities can go ahead and relocate before the widening project, hopefully starting first quarter of next year. And then Willow Lakes Road improvements for the Willow Lake subdivision. We recently did a drainage improvement project in that area. And so the next steps are going to be doing some road resurfacing. Are there any questions about any of the projects on this list?
Question for Chatham County? Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, sir. Thank you, ma'am. City of Savannah?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe Shearhouse with the City of Savannah. Just a few brief updates on four projects that we currently have going on. First is DeLesseps Avenue, the widening from Waters Avenue to Skidaway. There's been a lot of activity on that site. We're excited to continue to make progress. The relocations, utility relocations of what we've been focused on recently and are seeing significant movement. So we look forward to that project continuing to progress. The project Duran, which is listed as 516 to Duran Avenue, is still within the environmental review process. We're working with the federal administration to get our ROD, our record of decision, so that we can move forward with right-of-way acquisition. Truman Park Linear Trail Phase 2B, unfortunately, we put this project out for bid and received no responses, which was unfortunate. So we are assessing our next step to put a priority on movement of this project first.
Joe, he's updating that because that item, the project that Bridget added on yesterday, didn't show up on here, but it's attached properly, but you don't have it up there.
Okay, that's fine. I can certainly
move
update
ahead.
The board.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so the other project I'd like to provide the board an update on is the MRR interchange modification report feasibility study. We're working through an agreement with GDOT so that project can be put out for bid. We're excited about that as well. And the Middle Ground Road, Montgomery Street, we're continuing to work with GDOT to put together an RFP for that project to progress. That's the City of Savannah update. So I'll take any questions if Mr. Chairman and board members have any.
Questions? Clark?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Shearhouse, we have been putting our project to rent for several years, but from whatever environmental studies and all that, what is the hiccup? Why can't we move forward with this project? And it's a question that all of the residents in that area have, because they are still stuck on Duran.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Milton. And maybe I could provide some context to exactly where we are.
And then I may even invite you to a neighborhood meeting.
And we'd appreciate that. So the City of Savannah went through an extensive public engagement process with Project Duran, the most extensive public engagement process that the City of Savannah has ever been involved with.
I think that was probably 25 years ago.
That's correct. So it's began about 10 years ago, but it's been ongoing. So in order to receive federal funds, you're required to do a certain level of engagement, and you're required to submit a public engagement plan. The City of Savannah submitted that public engagement plan to the federal government, who approved that plan. The City of Savannah then executed that public engagement plan and went back for our record of decision when we received information that engagement plan was insufficient after it was already approved by the federal authorities. They then asked us to do additional engagement with one particular environmental justice neighborhood, which we have canvassed many, many times. Through many conversations with federal authorities, mentioning that even with additional engagement, we'll lack to receive many responses from this particular neighborhood. Also, with support from neighborhood leaders of other environmental justice communities around this project who are fully supportive. Unfortunately, the federal government still wanted us to do some additional outreach, which we have completed. So we're waiting on that record of decision to come forward. We are likely as frustrated with the amount of time that this project has taken, and look forward to a positive update for this board and for the community.
Thank you very much. I'll look out for a call for a meeting. Thank you.
All right. Anything else? All right. And the short answer to that is, if you don't satisfy the federal government, environmental people, you ain't going nowhere. It's not. That's what's got it held up. It's environmental issues that exist. All right. Who we are? We're at Savannah Hills ahead. They're not here. Okay. Chatham Area Transit. We just got that. Well, I could have got something.
I can bring it up.
Whatever y'all doing, let's make it short, sweet, and to the point.
Sorry.
All right. Cause, we got some other stuff that had to go on, and all right.
Chairman, I think everything. I think I've already reported on this in some of my earlier comments anyway. So unless anybody has any specific question about this, I will not go into detail on them again.
All right. Any questions? Nope. All right. Let's go and move on. You got anything on that?
I don't think anybody's. Yeah. Stephanie's not online for the last committee meeting, for the last mm-hmm. report, but the report is attached to the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tipped funding tracking is also attached to your agenda. So basically, everybody's making progress. So no funds is being in danger of lapsing at this point.
Okay. Grant opportunities.
Before I do that, I just want to mention, I didn't include that item, to the Cornfield board. We do, for the TCC, we do announce a call for plans and studies. So if you want to pursue a planning study or something that we will apply for the discretionary funds, please make sure that you send us that information. Basically, it's project title, project scope, cost estimate, and normally assume 20% of local match that you have the capability. So we will include that information in the UPWP. So in September, in next September, when we apply from the Georgia funds, PL funds review committee, and we will have that information included in the UPWP.
Okay.
So just want to let you know.
Anything else?
And then the grant opportunities, because we got so many notices of funding opportunities from the AMPL, from USDOT, and from Federal Highway, from Federal Transit. So we a lot of those grant opportunities are eligible to our local agencies or local municipalities. So take a look at this. I think Kathy might want to take a look at the TOD, Transit-Oriented Development. And then there's another SMART grant funding opportunity coming up. And then the pathway to removing obstacles to housing, that's applicable probably Chatham County, City of Savannah, all the municipalities. So just take a look at this. So we just include all the grant opportunities that we are aware of. So we want to be like information custodian for you so that you can just take a look at this. And if it's eligible to you, I mean, or makes sense to you, you can just start apply. If you need the MPO's assistance, please let us know.
Well, Coda, I just wanted to mention for clarification to some of my earlier comments, this NOFO on this SMART grant, this is exactly the same level of funding type SMART grant that we applied for and were funded under last year. This is not the bigger implementation dollars yet. They're doing another round of what they did last year. So we will not be participating in this one because we've got to get to implementation. So we're eligible for what they'll call SMART phase two.
Okay.
Yeah. And also remember the match. If you're coming after some of this for the local jurisdictions, that's something that you have to budget for or at least have some type of fund for to deal with the match component, which changes when you apply for something like this.
All right. Anything else?
No.
Our next core MPO meeting will be November 1st. All right. And that's based upon, I know it's supposed to have been the end of October. But that week, and I'll get with you specifically. And when I say you, I'm talking about the municipalities as well as the core, right? These grant opportunities you talk about as well as federal dollars that can come to Chatham County. The week we were supposed to have, core MP, I'm invited to be in DC to go into some specialized meetings. So hopefully we're going to come out of there with stuff that's going to boost what we're doing here and what each one of the municipalities is doing. It has worked for us in the past. And I can honestly say this now. The last time I went in there and did this, CAT benefited because they got $30.7 million, right? So that's why this meeting that I have to attend during the October meeting, that's why we're moving the meeting to November 1st, okay? So that I can get the information and bring back so that we could put some things in place. There will be opportunities for all of you now. Let me say this too. All elected officials in Chatham County, Effingham County, and Bryan County, and y'all pass this word in case they're not here. All elected officials is for elected officials. All right. GDOT is coming on the 7th of September. It's going to be at 12 noon at the Botanical Gardens. You need to call my office and talk to Ms. Janice or Gail or Danielle. All elected officials, all right, in Chatham County now, all elected officials. GDOT has a study that they have done for the Coastal Empire, all right, which includes all four of the counties, Bryan County, Bullock County, Chatham County, Effingham County. Your elected officials need to be at that meeting at 12 noon on the 7th, September 7th, at the Botanical Gardens. They need to register and be there, okay? I did not want to have to explain that plan to nobody. So I asked them to come, all right? On behalf of Chatham County, we invited them to come. And GDOT's going to tell you themselves what's in that study and how they produced that study, okay? But we are limited to the elected officials. So please, ma'am, please, sir, all of you who are an elected official should have already gotten an invitation from me. And then those specific partners that they identify, and when I said they, I'm talking about you, I did not identify, you should have gotten an invitation for me to be at that meeting, all right? All right? I'm telling you, it's like you say, if you're slow, you're going to blow. If you miss, you're going to lose, okay? Please pass that on to all your elected officials in the three counties that make up, in fact, the four counties that make up the Coastal Empire: Bryan, Bullock, Chatham, and Effingham. All right. That invitation went out. I need to get a head count. All right. GDOT has set it up. I mean, has agreed to do it. And so they're coming. All right. So that you'll know what their study says, so that we can go forward. And I'm telling you now, elected officials, and hopefully you're going to hear that, some of your funding is going to be tied up to that meeting. So I would advise all elected officials to be there. I'm not going to ask anybody's questions. I don't want you to send me your question to ask them. Come yourself and ask them yourself. All right. So you get firsthand information and not from me. All right. Can I make that any clearer? All elected officials. All right. With that, move for adjournment.
Adjourn.
Second.
Probably motion and second that we adjourn. Ready for the question? So move, we adjourn.